It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's already February 10th and 11th. Where does the time go? Just want to thank my great colleagues, Krista last week, as well as Stacy. We were talking about Health Rural Wellness and the Provisor software, the company that we acquired that allows a dental hygienist to ask you a series of questions. Then depending on your score, you may be entitled and empowered to get a third or fourth cleaning in the calendar year, which Delta Dental pays for. So Krista and Stacy did an awesome job, you know, explaining that program. For my running friends, great job last weekend. We had the Winter Wilds at Pat's Peak, which is a two-loop course up and down the mountain twice, and so many people did well. And, of course, we also had the 4th on the 4th on February 4th, and Perry Segros, who's a professor at NHGI, organized that as a fundraiser for NHGI. One of the great things about this program, in addition to be able to talk about oral health and wellness and a lot of sports and wellness, it also allows us to feature community partners and also instrumental and compelling personalities in New Hampshire. So this weekend with me is Fred Bramante. I got to call him Dr. Fred Bramante because he did get an honorary degree, Fred, right?
Honorary doctorate.
There you go. So I'm going to call him Dr.
Southern New Hampshire University.
I love it. And of course,
Doctor of Education.
Doctor of Education.
Lucky
well
me.
Well deserved. And he's written a book as well. And we'll get into all these topics, competency-based education. But Fred, tell us about your background. You served with me on the State Board of Education for many years, but you also predated me. You were the chair. So tell us your background and how you were able to do that, as well as you were the CEO of Daddy's Junkie Music when it was a vibrant, you know, big company.
Well, thanks, Tom. I was a terrible student and really didn't know what I wanted to do, kind of fell into the music business. And I played in a rock band when I was in college. And one day my lead guitar player came to band practice and told me about a friend of his who needed bail money. So he had a guitar that he needed to sell, and I bought the guitar and sold it and made $50 back in 1966, and that was the start of what ultimately would become Daddy's Junkie Music, which was, we had an amazing 39-year run. It was money for nothing.
But your passion.
I loved it. It was just too much fun. But, you know, but I started out, you know, to be a teacher. And I had a job teaching 8th grade science in Stamford, Connecticut. Left teaching to start to go into Daddy's full-time. Daddy's had started as a part-time business while I was a teacher just to try to earn a few extra bucks. But I went, I left teaching after 6 years to pursue Daddy's full-time, but I really never got the educator out of my blood and stayed engaged in education and eventually got named to the State Board of Education and ran for governor on an education platform. And, but people recognized that education was a big deal to me and got named chairman of the State Board of Ed.
Awesome. So this is why we're two peas on the pod, because if you go back to my high school yearbook, it says, you know, how you have your photo and then different things you did, and then allows you to make a comment. It says, I wanted to become a teacher. So it didn't work out that way for me, because my first job with John Hancock in Boston, I learned right away, because I got a managerial position within less than a year, that, you know, in business, you can actually teach. So I have this real key need in my life, too, in terms of education. And I know you agree with me, education is the key to everything. And in fact, you know, one of the things we'll be talking about is the Coalition for Business and Education. One of its tagline that you and one of your colleagues, Gary O'Neill, coined is that education-driven economy. So not only is it, to me, education is the key to civility, civil rights, everything, it's also, I think, you know, key to the economy. Yep. So we're on the same page, correct?
Absolutely. We've known that for a long time, Tom, haven't we?
And now we've kind of formalized it. And it was always great, you know, working with Fred on the State Board of Ed. And people don't, you know, realize this, but it's obviously a non-paid position, and you know, the meetings in my last 3 or 4 years, they were at least monthly, they were all day, and there were several other things that you had to do as chair. We participated in many forums to talk about the, you know, the new minimum standards or the new Common Core or whatever, and it was just a lot of a labor of love, but it's definitely a, you have to be totally committed to it, and it's a voluntary position. So thank you for the service to the state.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much. And I think ultimately what we did on the State Board of Education was so important. That, I mean, we are New Hampshire. Our State Board of Education is responsible for changing the direction of education in the United States. It's something that maybe not all of your listeners know about yet, but they will.
They will.
Because it's getting there.
So this is one of, Fred and I have what we call strategic impatience. So, so many, many years ago, actually, there's a famous blue book that I still have in my office. I think the one thing I kept from all my files, and it's a vision for redesign. And, you know, most employers and you know, the average citizen out there may not realize that, but the minimum standards and so forth are set up so that schools have all of this flexibility. It's not based on seat time, but we'll be the first ones to say it hasn't been necessarily uniformly cascaded and implemented, you know, at every school district. Obviously, one of the reasons why we love New Hampshire is local control, but that also means that you can have this sort of brilliant document, but it's still up to the local school district to implement it and for parents to understand and so forth. So anyway, so keep the good fight going, Fred. You know, there's no one with more passion for education than Fred. So this ultimately spawned something called the New Hampshire Coalition for Business and Education, which is really a nonpartisan organization, which includes many of the business leaders in the state, many of the education leaders of the state, policy leaders and so forth, and we're committed to improve the quality, access, and relevance for education for New Hampshire citizens. And the shorthand version that I always use to describe this is when I was on the State Board of Ed, I would go to a lot of meetings with educators, and they would sort of lament, well, we don't know what businesses want. And then I would be meeting with CEOs, and they would lament that the quote-unquote, I'm quoting them, the kids coming out of high school and college, they don't have the soft skills, they don't have STEM, this and that, and you know, and don't teachers know what we need? So finally, when Fred Coker presented this opportunity to me to see, I said I would do this, but I want, you know, some actions coming out of this. I just don't want to keep talking about what we already know. So let's take a step back and talk a little bit about 6525, and then the part that you're mostly interested in is sort of the pathway to it. But why don't you describe 6525 from your perspective?
So the Lumina Foundation basically collected data from virtually every state in the United States on education, attainment, and workforce needs, and shopped them around the country to try to find groups that would be willing to look at the data and then take the data and then do something significant with it. And they came to our group, the group that Tom chairs, the New Hampshire Coalition for Business and Education, and we took the task on. They basically said to us that about 50% of New Hampshire's workforce, adult-aged workforce, has some form of a credential. Most of them are degrees, but also, you know, there's plumber's licenses and, you know, and welder's licenses and other things. So, but about 50% have these form of career related credentials, and at the same time we've got literally tens of thousands of jobs that pay really good wages that are going unfilled in New Hampshire, and they require skilled help, and so we don't have the skilled labor to fill all of those jobs. So the group studied the data and decided that we needed to get that number from 50% up to 65% by the year 2025 in order to ensure that these good New Hampshire companies have the employees that they need so that they can grow here in New Hampshire. And so that's our task, and it's a tall task, but the coalition decided to take it on, and
And we've gotten many other stakeholders behind it. The community college system, the legislature is behind it, and so forth. And the BIA, the Business and Industry Association, which is effectively the statewide chamber. And it's easy to remember 65 by 25. In other words, by the year 2025, we want 65% of the adult population to have one of these credentials, or, you know, or a college degree. And you're thinking, well, Fred just mentioned that we're roughly at 50%. You know, how do we grow it from 50 to 65? And that is going to be a daunting task for many reasons. And,
absolutely.
And Fred has a business plan, which we'll be talking about after the commercial break in terms of the pathways to it. A lot of organizations are aware of this, such as the BAA. There's a workforce development officer they now have, Sarah Colson. So we're getting the word out. But as you know, Fred, when I make little speeches in the community, or if I just see a neighbor and I say, what do you know about 65-25? Often I get the blank
crickets,
or the deer in the headlights. So the whole point is we all love New Hampshire. We all stayed here. I moved up here in 95, and I thought it would be a five-year gig, and I'd go back to Massachusetts. But once you're here, you realize you can make an impact. There's so much you can do, and it has these competitive advantages, some of which, you know, the tried and true, you know, no sales tax, no income tax, and all that. But in order for us to maintain our competitive advantage, we really do have to get by the 65-25, because as Fred will no doubt validate, other states are also having their version of 65-25. Some states are aiming for 60. We've taken it to the next level in 65. Well, after commercial break, Fred, I want you to talk about your proposal on the pathway to the 65-25 and your work as the president of the National Center for Competency-Based Learning. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Here we are, February 10th and 11th, and joining me this weekend is Dr. Fred Bramante. Fred ran for governor, was the CEO of Daddy's Junkie Music, was the chair of the State Board of Education, and now with me is passionate for education, making New Hampshire still the best place to live, work, and be educated. And he's a member with me of the New Hampshire Coalition for Business and Education. Again, big shout out to my running friends for participating both in the Winter Wild Pass Peak Double Loop course, as well as the 4th on the 4th on February 4th. So, Fred, let's talk about what we mean by competency-based education. Let me just, and I stole this from you, I think, but this is the one thing that people get when I explain it this way, which is you get on a plane. If the pilot said to you, I got 100 on takeoff, I got 100 in midair, and I got a 60 on landing, and you raised your hand, and you said, how many people would stay on their plane? No one would, right?
Right.
Okay, but in today's educational system, that would be an average of over 80.
Yep, and you'd pass the course.
And you'd pass, and that's that, and then you would crash. So the idea of competency-based, you know, education is that you don't, it's not seat time, it's passing the competencies, you know.
Mastering
the competencies and moving on. So in that example, you have to prove, you know, that you're competent in landing the plane. So when I explain it that way, my employees understand it, my neighbors understand it, and so I know that's a simplification, but that's basically what we're talking about.
Absolutely. So, and I'm very proud that our State Board of Education was the first in the United States to remove the time requirements from the regulations and say that credit would be no longer based on how many hours a kid sat in a seat, but would be based on whether or not a student has demonstrated mastery of the required competencies. So, I mean, it's really kind of like karate lessons. You don't move on to the next belt until you can prove that you've mastered all of the elements of the belt that you're working on. And it's just so logical, and why it's taken education in the United States this long to figure that out is just really puzzling. But I'm very proud that we were the first ones. And while you're right, Tom, that it's still taking root here in New Hampshire, there are still school districts, plenty of school districts, that are doing the same thing they always did, giving A's, B's, C's, D's, sitting kids in class for 180 days. So we've got a long way to go, but we are getting there, and New Hampshire is actually leading the pack on this. So it's very exciting. This is the future of education in the United States. It makes so much sense. Why should a kid who's on the track team have to go to gym class? Why should a kid taking private piano lessons go to music class? If they want to, fine. But being required, they should only have to demonstrate that they have learned what they were supposed to learn, and then move on.
And if a student, can demonstrate competency in math or finance and they had an internship at a Delta Dental, that should work as well.
Absolutely. Anytime, any place, anyhow, any pace. Can you imagine a kid saying, I want Mrs. Jones for English, but I want to use my karate lessons for my physical education. I want to play in a rock band for my music credit. I want to do world history online. I want to learn automotives at the car dealership, space science at the planetarium, etc. You make the world the classroom. All of this becomes available for kids for credit toward graduation. It's a different model of learning, and it will be more cost-effective, more exciting for kids, better for everybody. So we're going to get there. It's going to take a while, but we're going to get there.
It's definitely a process. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's more exciting for students. If some students learn better online, there's VLACs in New Hampshire.
Yep.
And there's also an economic component of this. I mean, the reality is, you know, I know some of our, you know, our employees have gotten their college degrees through the College of America online, you know,
yep.
program at SNU. So and they had to do it raising a family and so forth and so on and so forth. So there are economic realities, there are practical realities, and it's a great, you know, great fit for students, you know, young and old. So what compelled you to start the National Center for Competency-Based Learning?
Well, I served on the state board for a long, long time. And after Daddy's closed, at 39 years later, unfortunately, the company closed, broke my heart. But, I had to face realities.
Is that, and just as a footnote, is that primarily because people then getting this stuff on the internet, or?
Well, I mean, lots of factors, but that, you know, retail is it's not what it was. It's just not what it was anymore, and it's never going to go back to a brick and mortar model. You know, online just takes a bigger and bigger hunk every year. So there were a bunch of factors, but that certainly was it was an important one.
So fast forward. So now competency-based learning, the National Center.
Yeah. So I had to decide what did I want to do. I wasn't ready to retire and plenty of energy, as you know. And it's like, okay, do I go back into the music business? And I decided, no, that the stuff we started on the State Board of Education was too important. And I needed to find out what would happen if I really put an effort into trying to, you know, assist school districts in New Hampshire and beyond in moving this notion of a competency-based learning experience forward. So that's what we do. Our vision is the world as the classroom, and our mission is to operationalize experiential learning so that it becomes a staple of a public education.
And you have all done a lot of consulting outside of New Hampshire.
Yep.
And I think what we don't realize in New Hampshire, we have this platform that, thanks to Fred and others, allows us with the minimum standards and so forth to have all of this, you know, flexibility to do this. And we don't want to sort of lose our leading position. But you've been out in Iowa and other states. And isn't it true? I mean, I know I find this when I travel for my real job for Delta Dental across the country, people say, gee, you know, New Hampshire is doing all these exciting things, but now it's time to implement.
Absolutely. So, I want to see the reality of this, what it could look like if we really did a phenomenal job and what it could mean for kids. And that's the most important part. I know what it means to feel like I wasn't a very good student. And I think, you know, I tell people all the time that school taught me that I wasn't very bright, and life taught me that school was wrong. And I worry about kids like me that don't flourish in a traditional classroom environment. So here's an opportunity to have them learn their way and attach their interests, passions, and dreams to learning opportunities that exist inside the community. And I think we give kids control of their learning watch out, they're going to do some absolutely amazing things.
So you wrote a book. I've written a book, so I know that that's a lot of work. So tell us about that book.
My book is called Off the Clock, Moving Education from Time to Competency. It's on Corwin Press. It's been interesting because we put it out. I think we might have been the first book on competency-based learning, myself and my co-author, Rose Colby. And the sales keep going up. It's really interesting because I think that even though it came out in like 2012, you know, it more and more people seem to be interested in the whole competency-based movement now. So, you know, what we started as that conversation is now in almost every single state in the United States, in maybe early stages, but it is moving. More and more people are getting interested in it, so it's very exciting.
Now, in your career, and because I want you to have a great home life, you neglected to mention, I think you met your wife when you were a teacher.
Yeah, right? Betty and I were school teachers. I was a science teacher. She was an English teacher.
And there you go. So yeah. that helped that as well. So back to 65-25. So as Fred mentioned, we're about at 50%, 49.8%, and we want to get to 65% by 2025. That is 65% people with either a credential or the college degree. If we just keep doing the same thing, we'll only be at 58% by 2025. So, of course, the classical definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
Right.
So your thought is to, you know, have a pathway to the 65-25 pilot. We only have a couple of minutes. Why don't you briefly describe your theory?
Well, our group that put together the plan to for this pathways concept basically said that a high school diploma is no longer sufficient to send non-college bound kids into the workforce, and we decided that by 2025 we want virtually every high school kid to have some form of career related credential, either have one or be on a path to one while they're in high school. It's a big lift. But I'm convinced that kids will flock to this, and so that's the plan is to, and we're looking for schools to want to pilot this, and so I'm very excited about the possibilities here.
And another thing, you have a lot of balls in the air. It's all great. No one has more passion for education. Fred, tell us about the 10,000 Mentor program.
So, you know, we have a one of our programs is called 10,000 Mentors. The goal is to, you know, basically harness the business, largely the business community of New Hampshire, and give them the opportunity to what I call road test kids who have demonstrated an interest in their industry. We know what's going to happen when they find kids that are really good. They're going to end up tapping them on the shoulder and say, "Can you give us some time?" It's going to lead to employees. And we also developed an IT tool, a mentorship engagement platform that we call Mentor Connect. Basically, it's dating software. We, you know, want to match kids' interests to community learning opportunities. And
all
things aimed at operationalizing experiential learning.
Love it. And we'll have to close on that, which is implementing this great vision and platform. Now is the time, so we need more businesses to get involved. You can contact me at tomraffio@anydelta.com if you want to get involved with the coalition, if you want to get involved with 65-25, which, again, we need to work together to make sure that by 2025, 65% of the New Hampshire adults have a high-valued credential or post-secondary degree.